Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. The Inner Game is about how we nurture and attend to our mind, body, spirit, health, and how that allows us to play a bigger game and make a bigger contribution in the area of purpose that calls to us. And these are conversations with people who are committed to making an evolutionary difference with their lives from a place of balance and love and service. Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming Roderick O'Connor to the show. Roderick has been in law enforcement for 21 years throughout the Roaring Fork Valley in Colorado, including being the chief of police in Basalt and now part of the Aspen Police Department. He's also a black belt, Aikido master, and has a longtime meditation practice. And I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. Thank you, Roderick.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet. I've known you for a long time, and in this time of great reckoning within many of our social institutions, especially lately in policing, I just felt like it would be helpful for people to hear your story. And I wanted to make clear that, you know, all of this is Roderick's story. He's not speaking for other police officers, and, you know, the show isn't taking any position. As you know, our stories are always instructive and in healing in some way as we go deeper into places of unrest. So I just would love for people to hear the really interesting way that you got into law enforcement. Maybe just say a little bit about what you were doing beforehand and when that was in your life, when you made that transition.
Yeah, for me, I think it began back in the mid-80s. I got to have the pleasure of working with Tom Crum in Aikido, and Dick Keenest, who was the Pitkin County Sheriff at the time, was looking for a form of arrest control. There wasn't much available in law enforcement world at that time, and he thought Aikido might be what his deputies needed. And I got to meet a number of the deputies, and it kind of stimulated a thought process from when I was younger. You know, being the good guy, you know, playing cops and robbers and being the cop and all this kind of stuff. And but it wasn't time. I was working in the world of property management at the time, and I was really enjoying that. And I did that from 79. I moved here in the Valley in 79. I did that from 79 to 93. And then I had an opportunity to travel a lot with Tom Crum around the country and also some other countries, doing his IT works, working with people on peak performance, stress management, conflict resolution, those kinds of things.
Through the Aikido lens.
Through the Aikido lens,
right,
yeah. And if you don't know Aikido, Google Aikido, because there's some good things on there. Or read Tom Crum's books. He's got three books published right now. And so that, you know, the Aikido is really informing my background in a lot of ways, and it's a lot about rendering attacks harmless without harming the attacker. And okay, well, that's great, but how does that work in the real world and everything? And, you know, as I said, I was doing it in property management, then traveling with him. And then when I got a regular day job, I was in retail management, selling Mephisto shears in Aspen. And one of my students was a sergeant, a detective sergeant for the Aspen Police Department. And another person I knew was the assistant chief, Keith Ikeda. And I don't know, I just started having conversations with them, and the shoe store was great. However, that 800 square feet was getting really small. Mm. And so I was having some conversations with myself, and I started looking at, well, what kind of people do I want to work with? And I started coming up with, you know, I want to work with people that are really out doing something important, making a difference, adding value, you know, changing the world where they're at. And I also thought, you know, I wanted to work for an organization that might do something like that also. And then one day I saw an ad in the paper for Aspen police officer, and I'm thinking, well, I don't know, but, you know, and Glenn encouraged me to fill out the application, put it in, and I did. And then I got invited in, and, you know, that was, you know, 21 years ago when I started down that path. And, you know, there's a lot more story I can tell you around that, but basically, I stepped into a job. I was 50 years old 21 years ago when I stepped into law enforcement. And soon found out that it was my calling, it was my vocation, something I was meant to do.
It's really inspiring to me to, you know, to hear of that kind of a pivot, you know, at that age, you know, when, but so inspiring because you know, it's like you're at your peak at that point. You've covered a lot of territory, and especially with the intentionality that you had taken on in your life, a lot of work around self-discovery and self-mastery with Aikido and meditation, you know, and looking, and you told me earlier that, you know, part of what you were looking for was that you really wanted to reach people's souls.
And right, yeah, right.
It's just right, beautiful.
Right. Yeah, and I felt I could make a difference in that world.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I've been blessed. I mean, the last 21 years have been just an incredible time, especially being a police officer here in the Upper Roaring Fork Valley in Aspen, then Basalt, now back in Aspen again. And just, you know, and their philosophy just fit with me. And as I was telling you earlier, you know, the whole idea of community policing began with Dick Keenest, who was the sheriff of Picken County before Bob Broaddus. And he basically brought that in. And that was actually the beginning of this whole idea of community policing for the whole country.
When did that start, that Dick Keenest was working with that concept?
Probably in the early to mid-80s.
Interesting. So long
started
ago.
Started working with that. Yeah, no, it wasn't that long ago. But it was really an important addition to us being law enforcement officers. We're also members of the community. Mm. And as members of the community, you know, we're the paid members of the community that actually look out for people. And, you know, so the community policing has been a really valuable aspect. And it's heavy on education, heavy on, you know, helping people understand the why of things instead of just busting people for stuff.
Mm. So. When you've, I don't know how much you've sort of looked at what's going on in other departments and other places, but was there something, you know, unique to the kind of culture that Dick Keenest helped to build that, you know, that allowed community policing to really take hold here?
Yeah, I think it was just, it was a mindset, you know, he really wanted us to, you know, I don't want to say be gentle with the community, but it was kind of like being gentle with the community. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, these are our fellow citizens. I mean, that's one of the reasons I got hired at 50 is they go, well, you got lots of life experience, you know, lots of people in town. And so, you know, come join us. And, you know, and Dick developed the philosophy, Bob Broaddus continued it. And so did Joe DeSalvo now. They've been continuing this, and then on the other side, meaning the police side, you know, Richard Pryor, the current chief, is, you know, continuing this process of community policing, and, you know, we find it to be really valuable and really positive. Like right now, we're also the mask police.
Mm-hmm.
We go out in the evening around dinner time and walk around downtown, just, you know, and, you know, our whole deal is education. We see people without a mask. We just go, hey, do you mind putting your mask on? Oh, no, that's okay. You know, they pulled their mask out and put it on. And just there as a reminder.
Yeah.
We're not there to be law enforcement people in the sense of writing them tickets or anything like that. We don't want to do that. We want to just be a reminder. Hey, this is the behavior we need right now. You might put your mask on.
So other than kind of the, you know, being gentle with the community and focusing on education, what are some of the other central values or principles of community policing that really speak to you?
Well, communication is really big, and communication is huge in our world. We have to really, and communication doesn't just mean talking; it means listening, and that's really the huge part of it.
Yeah.
And we did a class a few years ago. All of us, everybody in the department, took a class called Crisis Intervention Training, and it was a 40-hour class. In the morning, we'd learn about different psychological ways of being and mental health issues that people had and everything. And then in the afternoon, we would do scenarios in different situations. But it was also really an advanced communication class. And what it taught me is I'm a first-born male, so, and also a police officer, so I want to go in, figure out what the problem is, and get it solved. But this CIT class was great because it taught us to slow down a little bit and start to develop rapport with the person, mm-hmm. find out what's going on,
yeah.
and then develop some empathy with the person. And then from that place, you can start to problem solve, but you're helping them find out how to solve their own problem, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Instead of me telling them what to do.
Right.
And so even though it was set up for people with mental health issues and psychological issues and drug and alcohol issues, it's a way of communicating with just about anybody. It's amazing how well it works.
Mm. It feels like that kind of communication, that kind of listening, and the building of rapport as a priority it could be really helpful in moments of increased stress. Is that kind of part of what you're going for there, to diffuse those crazy moments?
Yes. So that's yes. It's with my Aikido background also, I have found in situations where I can go into a highly charged situation, say at a bar or something like that, people ready to fight each other. And I found it, just the act of me getting centered, even before anything comes out of my mouth, changes the energetics of the whole situation.
Mm.
The energy just kind of settles down.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're dealing with alcohol and testosterone, it's a little bit more challenging than just regular folks. But it still works to be able to bring the energy down. And, you know, I mean, for example, the last time I was in a fight, I was in ninth grade. So I haven't been in fights. And I'm not in fights as a law enforcement officer. I mean, yeah, I have to put handcuffs on people. I have to, you know, guide them physically sometimes. But I'm not in a fight. And I'm using my words a lot. I'm just trying to calm the person down, trying to get them to comply, try to get them to understand what's going on. And so far, it's worked.
That's really inspiring to hear of the commitment of the police department here to that kind of training. Is that something you see increasing, you know, beyond the Roaring Fork Valley? Is that something that's unique to this area at all, or do you have a read on that?
I think it was unique to our area, and then it, you know, kind of started spreading out into the world. And I think there's been some different takes on it.
Mm.
And what it's not, what community policing is not, is pandering. Pandering is not community policing. And I do see a lot of that going on in the world. But what it is engaging. You got to engage. Like Aikido is transmitted through touch. You can't learn Aikido by watching a video. Law enforcement is transmitted face-to-face interaction with another person.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got to be there with them. I've got to be engaged with them. Even if they're angry with me, I've got to, like, you know, let that pass and just be there with them as close to 100% as I can be. You know, listening with them, trying to find out what's going on with them. Because I found in my life, my personal life, that when I'm upset about something, if I've got somebody, you know, a counselor or somebody who I'm talking to, who's listening to me, once I felt that I'm heard, I can get over whatever the upset was about.
So
I want to be able to give that gift or that opportunity to other people as well.
Right. God, that's such a big gift or awareness around successful communication.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just need to break in here for just a moment and say this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. Today, I'm talking with Roderick O'Connor, who has been in law enforcement in the Roaring Fork Valley for 21 years. And we're talking about his personal journey in law enforcement and you know, some of the ways that that policing is evolving. You know, so you've been sharing some really, really important ways that your Aikido training and your communication training and personal development training has really something that, you know, that is really supporting you in doing law enforcement the way that is really purposeful for you to do it. And I'm wondering if you have seen, you know, kind of an uptick of the kinds of stress that people are experiencing and how you're seeing that kind of expressed in your experience of law enforcement.
Yeah, there's definitely an uptick. I mean, just, you know, socially what's going on with the COVID, you know, politically what's going on with, you know, Washington, socially also what's going on with the, you know, social justice movement that's mm-hmm. happening right now.
Yeah.
I mean, all of it's kind of like, it kind of reminds me of the 60s when, you know, things are in flux mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, wait a minute, you know, the solid ground I used to stand on seems to be shifting.
Mm.
And it feels like we're at, you know, an inflection point like that again, where, okay, things are changing, you know. And I always enjoyed one of the, Warner Earhart said that a breakdown is the, you know, the first step to a breakthrough.
Exactly.
And so I like that because, you know, that then I can reframe this, the breakdown that we seem to be seeing around us is, okay, well, this is part of a breakthrough. This
right.
is part of, you know, where we're headed next, like in the most positive sense.
Right. The old has to really dissolve and you know, the structure
right.
kind of fall away before there's that space, the spaciousness
right.
for something else to come
yeah.
through.
Yes. And Matthew Fox, I heard him speak years and years ago, and he was talking about how when he was a kid, he would help free butterflies from their cocoon and how they all died. And what he learned was that the butterfly needed the act of breaking through the whatever that structure is that they're in to break through that, the cocoon, and come out and to be the butterfly. They needed that to pump the blood into their wings and to become the butterfly. But if you help them out, they died.
Oh, wow. I've explored that metaphor of the chrysalis so much, but I've never heard that as that specific thing. That's beautiful.
Yeah. And so we're like that too. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I mean, from one perspective, you know, as we grow and change, we've got to shed off something,
right,
and move forward. Or the founder of Aikido, Mori Ueshiba, he talked about how we're like fine swords, and we have to be forged. But you know, that means fire and water and hammering.
Yeah, it's
and
not
all
easy.
That. And then by that, we become these finely tuned instruments. And I think human beings are a lot like that as well.
Mm. How is compassion shown up for you, especially compassion for yourself, as you've grown and changed and been challenged through this experience?
Yeah, compassion's key. I mean, it's probably right up there with gratitude. It's key. It's pretty much everything. I mean, if I can't have compassion for myself, then how am I gonna have compassion for another? And then, you know, I think what's helped me get more compassionate is the whole idea of mindfulness and meditation.
Mm.
And one of my meditation teachers talked about how meditating is important because it helps us live our lives more skillfully. And I'm in a profession where I need to be as skillful as I can be. I need to be operating 100% of the time, you know, on my game all the time and be as skillful as I can be with, because I'm dealing with, you know, vulnerable people.
Yeah. You know, and I feel like there, while that's obviously and so importantly true in your profession, I feel like the stakes are so high on the planet right now that there's this opportunity for all of us, you know, to step into that real level, you know, those of us feel called to it anyway, you know, just to be more intentional about the skillfulness that we're bringing to life in whatever
right.
we're doing, in relationship, as a parent, you know, in our communities, you name it.
Right. Yeah, we can all, you know, we can all use being more skillful, for sure.
And
you
so
know,
you've...
And, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, you mentioned meditation, and I want to hear a little bit about what that looks like and how the benefits of that show up in your job.
Well, again, it helps me be very present. It allows me to, you know, get off my stuff and just, you know, be right there, be present with the person. You know, Walt Whitman said, "We're convinced by our presence," and it was like, yes, I just want to be present with that person, with regardless of what they're going through. And if I got a lot of stuff going on in my head, I can't, you know. It's like if my my inner being's not like that clear lake, but it's this big turbulent, like I'm going to miss stuff. But if I can get it as clear and as balanced as possible, then I'm not going to miss, you know, cues and information, and the hair in the back of my neck goes up, I'll be aware of it, those kinds of things. So it helps me stay really present with the person, which keeps me safe and also keeps them safe.
That's so interesting. I mean, it totally speaks to me because I know, you know, the level of self-awareness that I've experienced and that I experience in others that I work with in my own practice, how much more there is to bring to any moment that might be a pivotal moment, you know, where, like you say, you pick up on a cue, you notice an opening for a conversation, you notice an emotion that may have been veiled before, but because you're right, fully present, you see those things and you pick up on those opportunities. And it feels like that's the kind of presence that all of us can learn to bring to, again, any of our places in life right now.
Right. I mean, there's an intimacy in everything. I mean, a friend of mine had this on a retreat, which I saw a couple of years ago, and it said, it says, liberate the intimacy inherent in any moment. And so it goes to what you were just talking about, because there's that intimacy, that place that we need to get to where we really connect with another person.
Yeah.
That's really important. And if I got too much of my stuff going on, I'm not going to get there. Mm-hmm. But if I can, you know, be clear and present and compassionate, you know, well, then all those things will work and they'll be there with me. And, you know, at least then we've got a better chance of, you know, bringing the energy level down, the upset down to a more, reasonable place.
You know, I was just thinking, you know, when we're talking about compassion and just feeling into, you know, the heightened amount of stress there is right now in our culture that all of us are dealing with. And as police officers on the front lines of that, dealing with sometimes the most vulnerable, the most volatile, the most tricky situations, that they are caught in the crosshairs of that, and the necessity for their own self-care and ability to diffuse their own stress in that moment. And, you know, I'm just wondering about those practices that you do on the job that kind of support you to bring what you want to be bringing to each moment.
Right. As I get into that, I mean, cops are human beings too.
Yeah.
And the same thing that'll plug the average Joe in will plug a cop in. I mean, we're average people, you know?
Right.
It's like, and then, you know, once the cortisone gets flowing in your brain, then, you know, a lot of higher functions are gone. Staying present, breathing's really important, conscious breathing. Like, we're heading into a stressful situation, making sure I'm taking a few deep breaths on the way there. And a friend of mine came and spoke with us back in, 2008, 2009, when I was in Basalt, and she's a counselor, and she talked about how, she goes, when I got up this morning, I looked at my schedule, and I saw, oh, I was going to see this person, that person, this person, and I was coming to see you guys at 4 o'clock. And then I got thinking about it, and she goes, I realized that when you guys come to work, you have no idea who your clients are going to be during the course of your day.
Right.
And she said, that alone is very, very stressful. Mm-hmm. So that was a big eye-opener for me, because I just treated it as what, you know, what is what we do.
Right.
But now realizing that, you know, somehow some part of me thrives on that not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's a debilitating thing. It's actually a stimulating thing. And, you know, I'm kind of curious. Like, oh, gosh, who are we going to deal with today? You know? And so I think we've got to be comfortable with that ambiguity of, like, not knowing.
Right.
You know, and then being able to step into a situation. But you got to have a foundation behind. I have to have a foundation behind me to be able to do that. You know, I've got to have my meditation practice. I've got to be exercising. I've got to be going, taking the dog for a walk every day. You know, I've got to be doing my mindfulness work, my Aikido work, just to be able to, you know, to be able to operate 100% and be able to, you know, be there for the other person as well as myself.
Yeah. And I just, you know, part of me wants to just commend you and express my gratitude for the model that you have committed yourself to being. Not because you're wanting kudos from anyone, but because that's deeply what you're looking for in this experience, you know, to bring it full right. circle. You know, when you show up every day not knowing who you will encounter, you've already chosen that you want to touch their soul and that you
right.
acknowledge
right.
that they're worthy
right.
of that
right.
just because they're a human being.
Right. Yeah, I have to take care of myself so I can help take care of others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that seems like a beautiful place to end since we do need to wrap up. Thank you so much, Roderick. Is there anything you want to say in closing?
I think this has been a nice time to spend with you. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, thank you all for listening today. If you have a question for Roderick or me, please join the Facebook page at The Inner Game. The page acts as a forum to continue these conversations, and you can find out where to listen to past shows. And until next time, let love guide you.
Seeds are hopeful.